All right, so expected news that just came out last week that 2015 was the hottest year on record, the second straight year that that's happened. What can you tell me about this latest report and what makes it unique?
Well, we set another record. This is the fourth time this century that we've broken the record that dates back to 1880. So we kind of saw this coming. You know, it was a warm year out of the gate. We knew kind of by the middle of the year this was going to be a record. What happened that made it slightly different towards the end is an El Nino event blossomed in the Pacific and really accelerated the last few months of the year. So it really pulled away from the pack, kind of established new ground.
And it's significantly warmer. I mean, these were pretty incredible numbers.
It was a quarter degree warmer than the previous record. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a lot spread around the entire world for an entire year. And it was more than a degree and a half warmer globally than the 20th century average. So we really have moved into new territory as far as global temperatures go.
You know, and not only are we breaking records yearly, NOAA is putting out these monthly reports just every month. It seems to be a new record's broken. I think December, the record was broken, and it was the only year that it was warmer and the wettest month at the same time, and so that was a record. What is that like for you personally as a climate scientist? This is something that's probably something that's really personal to you to see these numbers. What is it like to watch these changes to our planet?
It's tough. You know, I don't claim to know what medical doctors do, but in some ways, I imagine when you have bad news, kind of repeated bad news over time to share with people, and you kind of know what the consequences of this are, it is a little tough. It's a little down. I actually cried when I saw the December numbers come out for the globe. It's a big deal. We're committing people that we haven't met yet, people that haven't been born yet, to a lot bigger challenges dealing with a global climate. So, you know, thanks for the question. I do take it personally. I think most of us there at NCEI, you know, we realize that this is a big deal. We realize that the country is going to be committing a lot of resources necessarily to climate change. So we've got to get it right, and we've got to get it out front. And, you know, it's unfortunately our job to be the messenger.
We're hearing about future events, but I know that things are happening right now as well. What are some of the things that we're seeing right now related to climate change?
So the biggest thing that we're seeing is increases in heat waves. So for a given time of year, we're scraping the warmest on record or threatening really big values there. So we're seeing heat waves of larger magnitude, longer duration, more frequency. So they happen more often. They're more intense when they happen. They last longer when they happen. But the more consequential thing is big rain. So in the eastern U.S., and we're no exception, we're getting a lot more of our rain in single doses. So fewer events bringing more rain at once. And that's a consequence for, you know, kind of how we manage our water and how we expect our water.
I think one of the things that's interesting is, you know, having just moved to Asheville like a year ago, I was kind of surprised to learn that this major NOAA Climate Center is here in Asheville, and people are always kind of surprised to learn that. How significant is this center in all of this data and all of these reports that are coming out?
Well, it's amazing. As a kind of growing up as a climatologist, Asheville is one of the places you want to end up. There are not many. There you can count on one hand. And Asheville is one of them. It's because of the center. You know, so that we are basically the world's library for weather data. All of the weather, like a lot of people, the weather data spends its retirement here in Asheville. And we make the data available to researchers. We do some analysis of our own. So there's a lot of people who dedicate their careers into putting that data away for safe storage and retrieval, and people that are working on the data so that it's as clean as it can be. Like NASA's analysis, they use our data. That stuff all comes through Asheville as well. It's a neat resource. We're all a little nerdy, so we don't get out much, but it's a fun part of the community, and I'm really proud to work there.
Well, speaking of the Asheville area, and of course, all over the East Coast, we had this massive snowstorm. It was huge. I mean, records were breaking. I saw a report about Mount Mitchell getting 66 inches of snow, which is hard to even fathom. I think we had something like 10 inches, you know, a little bit more maybe in the Asheville region. We do seem to be having more and more extreme events, and I know that sometimes the question is asked, are these climate change related events? What would you say to that?
Well, the big heat and the big rain have clear connections to climate change. A warmer atmosphere is going to give you more big heat. A warmer atmosphere can carry more moisture, so it can deliver a lot more rain. The snowstorms that we see, you know, it's difficult to connect a single event. You know, weather is a pretty complex thing, and it's the factors that set up a snowstorm set up over, you know, days rather than long time. But, you know, Jay Larimore is a colleague of mine at NCEI, and he's been involved in research. And the higher-end snowstorms, the big events, are tending to get bigger along the eastern seaboard. Some of that may be due to increased sea surface temperatures that can pump a lot more moisture into those storms. So that provides a lot more energy to make a storm stronger. It also provides a lot more moisture to deliver more snow. A single event, again, it's tough to connect the dots. It's a challenge. But in a loose way, maybe not as confidently as for big heat or big rain, some of the really big snow storm events seem to be getting bigger for a specific geography along the U.S.
We're seeing a sort of a pattern emerging with these extreme events. How is it, you know, as a climate scientist, are you able to see any increases in these extreme events? Are you able to sort of document and run the numbers, so to speak, just the data, and see whether or not these things are occurring more frequently or anything like that?
Yeah, and that's a big part of our responsibility is to do the math and to do the work and to make sure we're tracking what we think we're tracking. We have an example like the Climate Extremes Index, and I won't go into the details, but it is an index that we developed here in Asheville about a decade ago to help quantify, okay, are we seeing more of these big things? Are they getting bigger? And for big heat and big rain, indeed they are. The statistics play out. We also don't live in a vacuum. You know, we are tracking the billion-dollar disasters. So not only are we seeing some types of events become more frequent or maybe stronger, but we have a lot more people, we have a lot more valuable stuff, we're becoming a wealthier nation, and we're moving to the coast typically. So we're seeing more billion-dollar disasters that are, you know, a combination of changes in the weather and climate, but also changes in the value of the stuff and where we put it.
Yeah, and I know with these recent reports that those are some of the things that NOAA highlights is the number of these events that have a monetary value. What is the decision-making is in terms of what gets studied, what gets put out? What does NOAA want the public to know? What do they want them to kind of glean the most from these things? Like, how do you make those decisions?
We're a service agency, and we're particularly a service center. So in National Centers for Environmental Information, we're a lot like a library. People come to us for answers. They want to look stuff up, and we pay attention to what people are asking for. And if we have the capability to develop that, you know, to serve a broad number of Americans, we'll go ahead if we have the resources to invest the time into seeing that. So, yeah, people get, you know, we get questions all the time. Retailers, they want to explain some of the consumption patterns that they've seen. Energy and agriculture have really obvious connections to climate. So they'll ask us for data all the time. So the decision-making is really driven by the American people. It's who rings on our doorbell and sends us email or calls our phones, that, you know, we want to be responsive to what people need.
You talked about, you know, personally what it's like to see these records falling and how hard it is because, you know, you've seen the planet changing. But there's also so much more awareness of this issue. I feel like it's becoming more and more of an issue that people are taking seriously. It does seem to be that way. Do you think that's the case? And if so, like, is it a kind of an exciting time professionally to be in this line of work?
Yeah, if you strip away kind of the personal angst, yes, it is exciting time professionally. And also, you know, you're absolutely right. People, businesses, industry are much more sensitive and aware of what's going on with the climate. We are much busier than we were just a few years ago because people are starting to incorporate these into their corporate planning, their personal planning, their institutional planning. People want to look at data. So I'm optimistic that the challenge won't go away. The challenge is there, but I'm optimistic that we're now beginning to rise to the challenge as a country.
Mm-hmm. When you were just interviewing with Diane Rehm, and one of the issues that came up that they addressed to a journalist, because the question was, is, you know, something along the lines of, are journalists doing their job, you know, are reporters doing their job of reporting this issue in an appropriate way, and it was framed around, why don't we ask political candidates more direct questions? As a climate scientist, the question wasn't directed to you, and I was wondering, what's your take on that? And when you just kind of like scan the media landscape, do you think that the message is getting across? Do you think that media itself is doing its job?
That's a great question. And I think it's a difficult topic. You know, it's big, it's complex, it's kind of weird. You know, it's abstract. You don't see it happening every day, and it's challenging. So for, I think, any individual reporter or journalist to jump into it, you know, there's a lot of homework involved. So I do think that we're doing the best that we can. I think climate scientists bear a lot of responsibility. We've got to continue to get better at speaking in English and not and not numbers. So I think it's a challenge. Can we all get better? Yeah, I think we can definitely get better at connecting the dots between what's going on in the science and everyday lives. And I don't think we're going to get there without improvements, both with the climate science kind of communication aspect and improvements in the media. I think it is tough, though. It's a challenging kind of abstract concept.
What did you think of what occurred in Paris? Did you think this was a good thing, bad thing? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, so I honestly don't pay a great deal of attention to the policy aspects of climate. Just generically speaking, it's a big issue. It's a global issue. We're going to have to cooperate on global scales in order to deal with it, to both bend the arc of where we're going with climate change and to deal with the consequences of the change we've already committed to. So anytime we see big groups of people and groups of countries get together to talk about it, I think that's a positive. As far as the specifics of the agreements, I'm honestly not an expert, but I do know that, you know, we are going to have to work together. We share this climate with each other and with people that haven't even been born yet, and we're going to have to think on those types of scales in order to do the right thing for our kids and grandkids.
You mentioned how hard it was to get the December numbers, and having had a chance to sort of step back from them a little bit now, are you optimistic or pessimistic about our future?
No, I'm optimistic. You know, I think America has a long history of waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and then kind of jumping in with both feet and doing a massive effort to help things. And I think that's the model that we're going. We have some challenges maybe that we could have avoided. It's not fair in the way it works with people. If you're poor and if you're uninformed, and especially if you're poor and uninformed, the climate's going to, like a lot of environmental issues, is going to be a lot harder on you. So those are going to be factors that we're going to have to think of. I am optimistic. We've solved big problems in the past, and we'll work with this one. What we can't do is get caught in the trap of trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again like the climate was in 1920. We're going to have to manage what the cards that we've been dealt.
And what does that mean for our region? Because climate change is something that you can easily ignore if it's not happening to you directly. So is it happening to, is Western North Carolina feeling effects of climate change? And if not yet, when and what's that going to be like?
So we're seeing changes in temperature and precipitation patterns that really don't show up directly to the naked eye, but when you look at the statistics, you think, wow, we're living in a climate that's moving. Some of the impacts, you know, one of the wonderful things about living here is the ecosystems and the particularly the water quality. You know, a lot of that has to do with the specific types of forest ecosystems that we have on the top of many of these mountains, and they're extremely sensitive to a changing climate. And so keeping an eye on those and understanding, you know, their retreat patterns is going to be a big part of the challenges that we face here.
2015 was the warmest year on record. How big a deal is that?
It's by itself, it's not a huge deal. It is eye-catching. It is certainly easy, a nugget of information that's really easy to comprehend. But it's way more important when it's placed in context of the longer-term change that we see, not just in global temperatures or even regional temperatures, but changes in precipitation patterns and drought and the retreat of glaciers and ice sheets around the world and sea ice around the world and the rise in sea level. You know, so scientifically, it's about pulling all of these multiple pieces of evidence together to really understand the changes that we're seeing. As much as I would like to say that, you know, our report was this big colossal thing, it's not. It's a piece of information that reaffirms what we already know about climate, and that it's changing. We're living in a warming world, and we're seeing the consequences of global scale warming.
It's kind of like I asked you this before, how, you know, kind of you're noticing more people kind of engaged on the issue. Are you noticing any changes from all of these reports? Are you getting more feedback? Are people paying attention more? I'm sure that the yearly one was probably more of a big deal than the monthly ones that come out every month, obviously.
Yeah, we notice, and I probably shouldn't say this on the radio, we notice in a lot of big bureaucracies, you notice when we're delayed. So sometimes we'll have electrical issues, or several of the countries around the world will not have shared their data in time, and we'll need to delay our report by day. And we hear from a lot of people that say, you know, what's the deal? You're supposed to issue a report on the 18th, and we'll say, no, sorry, we're doing it on the 19th. So they are... fundamentally, you know, for the global and particularly for the United States, a lot of people tune their business practices to the climate. And so those get monitored pretty heavily by parts of industry that we would have imagined. And that includes, like, you know, retail patterns, agriculture, energy, even public health. You know, people want answers about temperature, precipitation, drought. You know, it plays a big role. It's part of the world that we live in, right? And so to explain the things that they see in their own data, they often pull in climate data to help, you know, one of the many pieces of outside data that they use to really examine their own practices and their own results.
Gotcha. Well, Deke, I think those are the questions I had. Is there anything else about this that you've talked about it for now about 2 hours?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for coming in and meeting with and setting up for me. And hopefully I don't fall on the ice on the way out of here.
That's right. Maybe some global warming could help with that.
We could help, yeah, with the sidewalks. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Deke. All right.